is the meeting of the Community Services and Safety Committee. My name is Cynthia Delstrinos Johnson. I am the chair of this committee. We're joined by council member Zach Edan, as well as staff from the city. Council member Kate Curler will be filling in for council member Deshaun Quinn, who has asked for an excusal from today's meeting. We will go ahead and get started, and council member Curler will join us when she can. The first item on our agenda is the 2021 committee work plan, and Laurel will bring tee this one up for us.
Thank you, council member. It's the end of the year, so I, in all four committees, put a work plan in to kind of show you or give you an opportunity to reflect on everything that you've looked at and discussed and made decisions on. And it's an opportunity to, I guess, check in on the status of anything or ask questions of the other staff members that are here. But really, it's just a check-in.
Laurel, can I ask, is this also an opportunity for us to identify items that we want to keep for next year, or is that more of something that's done at a later time?
That's a really good question. I'm definitely open to that discussion. If you want to have that discussion, I'll make some notes. There may be other factors involved in deciding what goes forward, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Okay. So it's kind of like an open discussion. Okay. Council member Edan, do you want to share some thoughts first?
Yeah, I see a lot of complete. So I'm very proud of our committee and the staff. There's a lot that we've done this year. So I'm overall, that's kind of my reaction. And I would like for us to look into what areas and items that we should pass it to the next committee. Totally support that. Thank you. I yield back.
Thank you. I agree. It's good to see just what has been completed, but then, you know, part of me is like, okay, well, there's still stuff we want to do. We want to follow up on next year. It doesn't feel like the end. And when you see complete, you think, you know, it's over. But I liked, and I feel like we'll get more of an update from the fire marshal today. I know we have an item on that. The regional effort toward mental health services is something I'm still interested in, and just getting an update to see how that's going. We heard a little bit about it from the community member panel, and I know I remember us going through the process of getting an update on how that's going. Hello?
Cynthia, I think you're breaking out. I don't know if you can hear me.
Cynthia? She is for me as well.
Okay.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes. I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe my computer is overheating or something. I don't know. You guys went blank, and so I might have paused on you.
Yeah. Now you can go ahead. I think your camera is off, but the audio really works great.
Okay. So you can hear me okay. I'm just going to leave my camera off for now while I'm speaking because I think it was causing
issues.
Okay. So you heard my comments about the regional effort toward mental health services. The speed zone cameras. Update, it says complete, but I feel like we're still needing updates in the future on that program. The community connectors. We didn't hear too much, I feel like, about the equity policy implementation. And mm-hmm. I feel like that's an important item.
Mm-hmm.
I know tonight in miscellaneous, Zach is going to bring up the synthetic turf fields, and that's listed as ongoing. And if Laurel, you have any information about 39 through 42, which is blank, the boat program, Foster Golf, strategic plan, the fire station improvements. Just if you could give like a quick status update on those.
Sure, Council Member. I'm actually hoping that some of the subject matter experts on the call can jump in. Those were items that were talked about, you know, at the beginning of the year or maybe the year prior, but interruptions from COVID affecting work plans happened. And so if anybody has any comments about the River Rescue Program, Foster Golf sustainability, and fire station improvements, I would appreciate the assist.
I can jump in here if the committee would like. So let's just go down them. The boat program, river rescue program, is kind of been put on hold as we go into the budget cycle, and the council has been doing the fire advisory task force. Some more information has been coming through that group. But also as a budget amendment was dealing with the overtime issues in the fire department. So we had talked about that probably in first or second quarter of 2022, possibly as we come back to that. On the next one, the financial sustainability, Foster Golf Strategic Plan, I think we'll see that as we go in. There's been a big change in leadership in the Foster Golf Course. And so as Darren takes on that role, I would assume that will be probably mid-2022 as they work on those, you know, as they reinvigorate their strategic plan. Fire Station 53 and 54 improvements. This is on the council's work plan about how do we deal with facilities plans in general. And so that's a broader conversation about how do we deal with all the facilities that the city owns and operates. How do we maintain those? So that's, we're looking for the council direction on how it would like us to deal with all those, probably again in 2022 work plan. So those were the four main ones that were still blank. I see them as moving into 2022. And I'm open for any questions that the council may have.
I don't have any questions. Just that was enough for me just to see, you know, where things were. But I see Councilmember Krueller has joined us. We are on the first item on the agenda, which is just looking at the work plan. Zach already provided comments. Do you have anything you want to ask, Councilmember Krueller?
I don't actually have any questions other than, is it for this committee to decide, or are we just teeing this up for next year's committee to decide what their work plan is for next year?
That was like the first question I asked too. I think this was just more of like a look back and providing comments and just general feedback, but I don't think that we're determining necessarily the work plan for next year through this process right now. And I see Laurel's hands up. Laurel, if you wanna.
Thank you. I would definitely agree with that. The work plan for next year will be developed in collaboration with the incoming chairs and the incoming committees and things that we've discussed that carry over. But I did wanna say that the things that you mentioned as important topics that you see as ongoing topics, I completely agree with. I mean, obviously those things are important. They will continue to be discussed. And I just wanted to offer clarification that when my comment here says complete, it doesn't mean the work is done. It just means that the 2021 interface with your committee, you had it and we've checked it off as complete. It's by no means to suggest that those things are done. Thanks.
Thanks, Laurel. Zach, did you have additional comments?
Yeah, so I just wanted to comment on, you know, items that sometimes the outgoing committee can, ask the incoming committee some of the things that they would like to pass it along. But absolutely, the committee should decide what their work plan is on the items. And I suspect all the items that, Mr. Klein talked about, seem like those are really important and that will be going on. But there are other items that are ongoing that you've mentioned that I would certainly would pass my liking that that should be looked at in next year. Thank you. I yield back.
Thank you. All right. If there are no other comments, we'll go on to the next item, which is a contract for audio recording for interview rooms. And we have, oh, there you are.
I'm here. Good evening, Commander council members and staff. For those of you that have not met me in person, I'm Commander Todd Rossi, the Investigations Division's Commander with the Police Department. You all should have received a read-ahead with the informational memo and various other attachments. There should be four or five, maybe six of them. I can start with any questions you have from those read-ahead, or I can dive in with what I've got to present to you tonight.
It's good to see you, Commander Rossi. I get emails from you all the time, so it's really good to just put a face to you. So thank you so much, first and foremost, for your work here and just for joining us tonight. It's really good to see you. I think what would be good is just go ahead and jump right into the request. Yeah, but we have all the background reading materials too. So
okay. So I'll start briefly with the history of this. So in 2014, the police department contracted for services with a company by the name of Casecracker. They provided us with interview room systems within the 6300 building to include two interview rooms in one section of the building and one additional room near what was the old Major Crimes Unit conference room. We've obviously since vacated that building and are now located in the Justice Center. As we move forward and got closer towards occupation of the new Justice Center, I made some inquiries about the installation of a new system in this building. And the information I received was that there would be a system installed that would meet our needs. As we approached the move-in date, some training was conducted on the various systems, and then ultimately following the move-in, we received some additional training. We learned pretty quickly that the system that was installed is a security system in its heart, that it could marginally, at best, be used as an interview room system, and there is some distinct differences there. I can get into those here, or we can continue on. But in essence, what's installed here is to monitor the exterior of the building, various portions of the interior of the building. Some of those cameras, the spaces that are monitored, include audio recording as well, but not all of them. Of the rooms that were identified as interview rooms during the initial build, three of those in the front lobby of the police department were identified as what I'll term soft interview rooms. And those are rooms where witnesses or victims are commonly interviewed, or even potentially juveniles that are being detained briefly, but not in one of the holding cells pending transfer of custody to their parents or another family member. So the soft interview rooms are really where we might have a conversation with someone who's a witness or a victim, and they're not feeling like they're in a jail cell, if that makes sense. The hard interview rooms are located just adjacent to our holding cells and feel very much like a interview or interrogation room. The rooms are very robust, they're very secure. And to access them, you have to come through either the Sally Port on the south side of the building, which also accesses the temporary holding cells of the police department. So it's a very different feel than coming in, where we potentially don't want victims or witnesses in those rooms, because it's definitely not the same feeling. Those rooms do have audio and video capability. But as we identify the system, we learned that it was not necessarily difficult, but the system is monitored from 7 different locations within the police, within the Justice Center. 6 of those terminals are currently active, but they're not in what I would call a private viewing area, where the monitoring of interviews or interrogations need to occur. We need a closed space, private room, without, I'll say, not necessarily public access, but additional personnel. This should be monitored only by detectives or personnel that need to be in the conversation. So we identified that was something that wasn't present in the system that really does need to be. Given that we don't have that traditional, what you'll see on TV, the interview room that has the one-way glass with 4 detectives hiding behind it, we don't have that here. And we didn't have it in the old buildings either. And so we need to be able to remotely view any interviews that are recording or being occurring and be fairly close, but also potentially to be off-site or be able to share that capability, those interviews with our law enforcement partners, which is a capability we identified. And in addition, during 2021, some of you are likely familiar that there were some legislative reforms pertaining to law enforcement. 2 of those bills particularly identified requirements, legislative requirements, to have custodial interviews recorded, either audio or video or both, depending upon the age of the person being interviewed. So we have a legislative requirement to be able to conduct these interviews and be able to transfer files and whatnot, and to be able to retain those documents. So as I moved on, I looked at the process of how we would identify what our needs were. And I looked at the building, what we had, the number of rooms that we have available for interviews or that were identified as interview rooms. The storage and transfer of recordings. Ideally, it's seamless, very easy. It can be conducted over a network rather than having to download a file from one machine and carry it over to another to upload to evidence.com, the system we currently use for storage of all electronic media. The system as built does not provide for that. We literally must download to either a DVD, a CD, or a thumb drive and carry that over to another computer within the Justice Center and upload those files. Let's see. I also identified that we didn't really have what I will call an internal interview room available to us. Obviously, interviewing officers that might be part of an internal investigation or even an officer that may have been involved in an officer-involved shooting. When we conduct those investigations, we don't necessarily want to interview them in one of the hard interview rooms adjacent to the holding cells, but also interviewing them in outside in the PD lobby probably wasn't appropriate either. And so we have a room available that could be used as an internal interview room. That is co-located in the professional standards unit on the 2nd floor here in the Justice Center. I touched on it before. We needed the ability to be able to monitor those interviews remotely, whether within the Justice Center or even potentially offsite. The seamless transfer of those recordings to evidence.com was a, I'll call it, distinct advantage, which only one of the contractors is able to fulfill. And also, as I mentioned, the ability to share those recordings with our law enforcement partners, whether it be the King County prosecutor, our own prosecutor, or other law enforcement agencies in the area. And of course, the legislative requirements that I mentioned earlier. As I entered the process, I solicited for 4 quotes. I received 3 back from vendors I had contacted, and I did as best I could to get an apples-to-apples comparison. with each of the quotes. It's difficult to get a complete apples-to-apples comparison, but given the differences in various systems. But we got as close as we could. I then evaluated the systems, the quotes, as provided to see if they would meet our needs. One of the forms, or one of the documents I included, was the interview systems selection and evaluation document. That's what I used as a criteria for determining if the quoted systems would meet our needs. You'll see various criteria there under some key bullet points that I've identified. Once I evaluated those system needs and determined which was a recommendation, I forwarded that to Deputy Chief Lund and Chief Drever with my recommendation, compiled that in the informational memo that you have in front of you, and a draft purchase and service agreement is currently with the city attorney. They're looking at a couple of items that are itemized in the Axon's master service and purchase agreement, just to ensure that there is no conflict between our own contract and Axon's contract as we potentially enter into that service agreement. Obviously, we're here today for this initial proposal and recommendation, and then the future consideration, if it were to move forward, would be next Monday on the 13th, and some point following that, if approved, would be signed, and then hopefully in first quarter of 22, we would have the purchase installation of the system. So the biggest question is, what's the total cost of this, which everyone's probably waiting to hear? Total cost is estimated at $99,997.33 over the course of 5 years. That's broken down in five payments over that five-year term of $31,659 to Axon in the first year, plus an additional estimate of $2,000 for miscellaneous services for running cables, terminating data ports and whatnot in the interview rooms here at the Justice Center. Years 2, 3, 4, and 5 are equal payments of $16,584. Those are for the warranty agreement, service agreement, and licensing over the remaining term of the contract of 5 years, 60 months. The what I'll call the deciding factors, or that selection criteria that I identified there, you know, the five-year service agreement, it was longer than any of the other quotes that were received. All of the PD personnel are currently utilizing Axon systems or the evidence.com environment, so there's a familiarity with these systems that put Axon Enterprise ahead in some ways. Some of the things I talked about earlier, the files are readily exportable as needed or viewable from the server, and that's either local within the Justice Center or remotely, as long as the employee is using a city single sign-on login. So in essence, I could be at home on evidence.com and be able to monitor a interview that a detective were conducting if needed, as long as I'm connected to the city's network securely. We have unlimited storage capacity, which with many crimes, their statute of limitations can go on for years. Homicides that are unresolved, we retain that evidence indefinitely in some instances. I have detectives that are working cold cases currently that are 20 plus years old. We have that evidence still on hand. So the ability to have that unlimited storage of interviews is a key selling point there. The direct transfer from the servers to evidence.com eliminates the need of employees to manually transfer that data. And as I talked about as well, the local or remote viewing of interviews as they occur. Do you want to hear the amounts for the additional quotes? And
let me see if we can, if council members have questions.
Sure.
First. Unless Chief Drever wants to jump in before we do.
Just, excuse me, thank you. Just one thing for clarification. Todd, thank you. Outstanding job presenting. One piece of information, however, the original system that was installed truly never was intended to be the interview equipment and software. That was supposed to be owner supplied. However, after making that decision, a thorough vetting with the TIS at the time had determined that it was antiquated and it just was not going to serve its purpose, which led us down the path of looking for this new system. So I just wanted to clarify.
Thank you, Chief.
Councilmember Kruller, do you have any questions?
So some basics. Has the attorney looked at the agreement?
It is. They've had it, started reviewing it last week. The questions that arose were in Axon's master service and purchase agreement, which is, it's a 47-page general document. They have the specifics now and are working with legal representatives and technical representatives with Axon to answer any questions that they may have.
Okay, so they're on their way, but it's not baked yet.
It's been initiated, but not complete.
You think it'll be complete by the 13th?
Emily Miner believes that she will be done by this Friday, yes.
Okay. Then TIS. I hear you mentioning TIS. Did they review these applications, and did they take a look at how well this integrates with our security processes, our way of linking into things, our databases? Mostly concerned about the security side of things and
sure.
How systems integrate.
Sure. So Marcus Chan has been involved in this process with me. That's really been almost a year-long process. He's been a part of the online demonstrations and for the technical questions that I wouldn't even imagine to answer or ask. He was there to ask those questions of what security issues there were. One of the benefits is that we currently have Axon Enterprises in the building with their servers using, they supply our body-worn cameras and our in-car video systems. So other than any new language that we were not aware of in their master service agreement or purchase agreement, it should be a near carbon copy. But that master service agreement, like I said, is being reviewed by the city attorney's office and has been shared with TIS for their review as well. But at this point, as I've worked with Marcus, and Joel, to some point, some extent, there are no issues have arisen.
Okay, I think the next question is for Rachel Bianchi, if she's on, to explain the financial impact statement that's here. We're using building funds to pay for camera systems.
So thank you, Council President. Rachel Bianchi, for the record, Deputy City Administrator. So yes, we're paying for the capital portion only. This was always part of the build. This is a owner-furnished, owner-installed. I see Councilmember Edan nodding, so that's part of the build. So that's why, but again, I think the key part of this is that's why we're only paying for that camera installation and not the ongoing service out of the public safety plan funds.
All right. I'm sure that Zach has plenty of other good questions. I'll yield.
Councilmember Edan?
Thank you. I just want to start off saying I do support this moving forward. Thank you so much, Commander Rossi. I think you did a great job of explaining the memo. Appreciate that. I wanted to ask one or two questions. One was, how is the current system does not work for our needs. So what are we doing in the interim to capture whatever we need to do before we get it all going?
Sure.
That's just one question. The second question It sounds like this is also will be paid part of the police's budget. And it's something that's already been accounted for. What is that allocated budget for going forward? I think the financial statement doesn't really talk about that. It says it will incur the cost within the 5 years. Kind of, if I'm assuming that there is an allocated budget previously. That's just one thing I was kind of curious. And then the comment I think Councilman Crowler has asked, I know that it was an owner furnished item, but the one I was going to ask Ms. Bianchi was, it says 25 to 40. So I wasn't sure with you know how much exactly that was Ms. Bianchi budget would be able to cover the total cost of the $97,997.33. I yield back. Thank you.
So I'll jump into the current first. So currently what detectives and or officers are utilizing when they do need to conduct an interview, they're taking their body worn cameras off and either setting them on a tripod or setting them on a table nearby. It works in a pinch, and it's more something that's designed to be used in the field, and it is less than ideal. Ideally, when conducting a custodial interview, it's good to be able to have multiple perspectives when someone who is in custody is being interviewed. You can catch their mannerisms and various things that they're doing during the interview to determine if we believe they're being truthful or not. But it also allows us, if we have that hardwired network system, to have not just for the ability of another detective to view it and pick up on some of those things, but also from the officer safety portion. In those hard interview rooms, you have a detective or an officer that maybe two that are locked in there with someone who is either already been arrested and is now being interviewed, or someone who is maybe about to be arrested based upon what we learn from that interview. So there's an officer safety aspect to it that if we have a detective outside the room and is able to monitor that conversation remotely, they can be ready to step into that room and intervene if the person were to become violent. So there's a workaround that we've been doing with the body-worn cameras, but obviously it is not ideal because we don't have that remote viewing ability currently. The budgetary issues. So there is money from the Justice Center Build Fund. And as Rachel mentioned, that would be the first year's capital purchase costs, which did not break that down for this meeting, unfortunately. Apologize for that. The first year's total cost is, I mentioned this earlier, was $33,659. I need to double check to make sure there are no I guess it would be the warranty or licensing costs included in that. I believe they are all included years 2 through 5. But as she mentioned, that would be available for the first year cost only. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Any other questions?
That was it. Thank you.
Okay.
I don't have any further questions. I'm supportive of this request and moving it to the committee of the whole, which is our next meeting next week. Councilmember Crowler, where are you on this?
I'm in total support. This is on par with what I've seen at other police departments, and I think it's going to be a good thing for both the police department and people who are brought in.
I agree. Thank you so much, Commander Rossi for putting this all together. You can tell that it's very thorough and you did a really great job just providing all the details. So I think it'll be a successful discussion next week at Committee of the Whole, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time, council members and staff.
Thank you. The next item on our agenda is, everything's digital for me, an interlocal agreement for fire investigator services. And we have Chief Whitwer. There you are. Go ahead, Chief Whitwer.
Thank you, council members. It's an honor to be here. This is Jay Whitwer, your fire chief. I have Fire Marshal Ben Heyman is with us, as well as Deputy Chief Norm Golden. They both have worked on the process as well and are available if any questions come up. I would like to start out that I did provide a informational memorandum, a few changes, though, to it. That will preface as we go into this discussion. The actual interlocal agreement, we did not receive that from our partner until early afternoon today. So we are proposing that I will go over this memorandum with you, give you the basics. You can understand what we are asking about. And then we will do a thorough review of the interlocal agreement and bring this back to council in January and move forward with it in that manner. Just timing did not work out for us, and getting that interlocal agreement from our partner didn't come as timely as we had hoped. So this is more of a FYI information for the three of you. And then we'll bring this back in early January to the council through the committee process. So to begin with, I do have Chief Heyman is online, and I'll have him weigh in here in a minute. We have found ourselves with a very large amount of fire investigations that are going on right now with the city of Tukwila. We are not unlike most of the other partners in the region and across the state. There have been a number of suspicious fires in Tukwila and in our surrounding communities. It is taking a lot of our time in the fire marshal's office to deal with those. There are state requirements for the investigations. We have very qualified people that work those scenes and do the investigations, and we partner with our Tukwila Police Department, which I am just very impressed with the collaboration that's taking place with our fire department and police department. King County Sheriff's Office, they do have a fire investigative group that we are collaborating with, as well as ATF. At the national level, they have a representative here that gets involved when we call upon them. Like for the past many decades, we do work closely with our neighbors, and we can continue to do that. This is just something that will assist us as we move forward. The idea is that as what was stated in the memorandum, is that we would enter into this partnership through an interlocal agreement with Puget Sound Regional Fire. We have reached out to the other agencies in our region, and they are not interested in doing a partnership specifically with Tukwila. However, there are discussions going on about a regional team being formed, and that surely will be addressed and explored further going into 2022. Our ask will be of the council is for us to enter into this interlocal agreement. The way it's being set up is that we would dedicate one of our full-time employees, FTEs, to this partnership. There will be no other cash or other type of reimbursements would be made between the agencies. That individual would assist with fire investigations across that region that Puget Sound protects now, as well as Tukwila. So shared resources between the agencies, that's something that we have found very difficult, is covering this 24/7 every day of the year. And so likewise with our neighbors, they're facing the same situation. Costs really are one of the driving factors here. I have been talking with the area fire chiefs about this exact situation that we're all facing for more than 4 years. And so we really are getting to a place to where we can enter into an agreement, at least with Puget Sound right now and Tukwila, to move this forward and provide the adequate coverage that we do need for our city. At this time, I would like to see if there's any questions so that we can move the discussion along.
Councilmember Kohler, do you have any questions?
I do not. It sounds like you're on your way to building some relationships in this area. I guess the only question I have is the specific role of this person. You say that you don't have a person to dedicate full time to investigating these, but I'm looking at the 60 to 70 cases per year. Can one person do that?
So traditionally, what in the industry is, that is about the maximum that one full-time employee can handle. Right now, we have our deputy fire marshals, so we have two captains that are assigned to the fire marshal's office. They do a number of different things, not just fire investigations, not just development processes such as permits and inspections, but other things that come into the office as well, compliance issues and things like that. So what this would do is that we would be able to dedicate one of our most experienced fire investigators to this process. That would free up the others in the office that have been spending time on fire investigation processes. We would partner, so it's kind of the win-win situation, right, for both Puget Sound and for Tukwila. Puget Sound is extremely interested. We have very competent people. They know that, we know that, and so this really does seem like a good way to go. And the interlocal agreement, once we're able to get that vetted by our attorney and by our administration, we'll bring that back to the council.
That sounds like a pretty good approach. The only other question I might have would be, it's hard to find people with these kinds of capabilities to do the investigations. And I understand that the insurance industry likes to poach them. There is no guarantee, but is there something about this position that might, you know, income or something? I am curious about the cost, but that will keep them with us and not have them go, wow, I'm highly valued and I'm covering multiple fire departments now and now snatch me up for a corporate fee.
Yeah, that's always a risk, right, that we deal with. However, I will say that our people are very committed to what they are doing and the service that they're providing to the community. I do not anticipate that being an issue that we would face.
All right. That's it for me. Thanks, Cynthia.
Councilmember Edan.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you to Chief Whitwer and Van Hamen and the rest of the fire department. Staff that have really worked on this partnership. I think this is really a great asset where you can work in a regional fire authority, and then and we can also benefit in that. So I just want to say kudos to following it through. I know we've had this discussion previously, and sounds like it's really in a good place, and I look forward on seeing the final product brought to the council possibly next year.
So just want to say thank you and thank you to the whole staff that has really worked on this. I do support moving it forward. I yield back.
Thank you. I also don't have any questions at this time. Just looking forward to seeing the interlocal agreement so we could take a look at it, but I'm also happy to hear that we have some solutions that could provide relief to our fire marshal. I know the last time that we spoke, there was just a lot of backlog, really heavy caseload to deal with. I don't know if Chief Heyman wants to add any comments, but it'd be good to hear from him, his perspective on this as well.
Yes, please, Chief Heyman.
Thank you for the offer and opportunity to speak, and want to make sure that Chief Golden gets recognized for the work that he's done on this as well. So I appreciate that, and great questions on this. We're definitely in need of this, and you know, the workload hasn't gotten less, it's gotten more, and I'm very grateful that we have relationships with Puget Sound that we can do this, and that we both have a need and we're willing to work together, and it's scalable. So as things change and we need to add services, we can do that. And it's great to have that trust in our partners there and working together that we can get into this and do it sooner than later because the need is there. I just greatly appreciate the time and the opportunity to make things better. And the comment and question about, you know, the pay and, you know, making sure our good players don't get poached. That's important to, you know, and it's not all about money, but it's also important to make sure that we have a work environment and a competitive environment that keeps people around. And I think the biggest thing is just making it so it's a great work environment for them. And when you're around other people that do well at their job, like the training consortium, you know, where we're all working together, we bring our A candidates there to go teach. Same thing with investigations. You're going to build on each other and challenge each other and have a better product. So this is very exciting, and we just look forward to your support. Thank you.
I think you're on mute, Chief Whitworth.
Thank you, Chief Heyman, for those comments. I agree 100% with what he has said. Chief Heyman has done a lot to make a comfortable working environment for the fire marshal's office with a lot of challenges that are placed before them. So I do applaud him. I would like to give a moment to Chief Golden, if you would like to weigh in.
Thanks, Chief. And just, I have nothing to add. I'm on my way to the Kraken game, listening to this, and I'm very excited about this opportunity. I mean, you guys hit it on the head. This is a partnership. And I don't want to say this out too loud, but definitely we would be getting the better end of the deal here. The average caseload for a fire investigator is 60 cases, and we're between 60 and 80. And unfortunately, I think that number is going to go up. As part of establishing the first fire investigation task force that was in place with Auburn and Kent back in the day, it was very successful. I just loved it. A battalion chief on the scene of a fire could just call for an investigator. And as fire marshal, I used to be able, any time the camera would go on, say, do not set fires in Auburn. We'll catch you. We'll prosecute you. This isn't the place to do it. And I want that same thing for Tukwila, because it's not the place to do it. And so this is the first step. And I am so glad that Puget Sound reached out to us, invited us to be the first participant. And I appreciate your support. And I think when you see the ILA, you'll be happy with the terms. And we'll be available to answer questions and make this the best thing for our community.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Golden, for that. I do want to just let you know how proud I am of our team. And these leaders here on the screen, they do a lot of good work. Just have the collaborative efforts and values that really make this whole region spin. So I'm really grateful for them. At this time, I'd like to turn it back to you, Councilmember Johnson.
I just wanted to ask a quick question. I just wanted to, so if there is a fire incident during the investigation, is the source of, like, is there a fee associated? There is some, curious if there is a few, if there's a property or a facility that had a fire and we investigated, the landlord of that space, do they pay some sort of fee in order for us to do that investigation, to give that report, or that's something reliable, that is part of our job to figure that report and send it out? And I'm just kind of curious on that, if that exists or not.
Chief Heyman, do you want to answer that, and then I
sure.
can follow up?
Just so I understand the question, you're asking, is there a fee that we are able to assess for, or do we assess a fee for fire investigations? Is that correct, sir?
That's correct.
Currently, we don't have one, and that's part of the service that the cost of doing business is the fire department. It's not a moneymaker. It's not a cost recovery type of incident. It's to prevent fires and to stop them from getting worse, and so that's about the only thing, is that we can try to catch the people that are doing it and prevent it from happening again. But right now, as it stands, we don't have a cost recovery fee schedule for investigations for our hourly rate that goes out there. There are, if there's extensive fees that are incurred at the incident or that are needed for investigations, sometimes there's the opportunity to recover those costs or charge them to the insurance company, but a blanket fee for service on that level, not at this time.
So if I, you know, I'm the owner of a facility and there's a fire, if I want to know what my fire department have found out during their investigation, and I request that report, is that accessible as a citizen of the city?
Yes, it is. When the fire investigation is complete, and some of them, you know, if there's staff available to do it, it can get done, you know, within a week or so. But in our situation, that takes quite a long time. And even the most basic fire takes a while to write up, because you have to document what you did, what you found, what you're ruling out. There's a big process to what you need to do. But you get a suspicious fire or fatality fire or a large dollar loss, those reports take a lot of time. And anybody can request those reports. When they can request them anytime, but they can be fulfilled when the report is done.
Okay. What is the best practice? Is there, like, across, I guess, the nation or our region, is it how we do it? We don't charge a fee for a report. Is that how it is?
I don't know of any agencies in this area that charge for fire investigation. Chief Golden might be aware beyond our, you know, South King County borders, but I haven't heard of a fee for the investigations. But the requesting the reports, those are all done through our records request process that we have in place. Homeowners, citizens can do it within the community, or whoever owns the business. Insurance companies do it, law firms do it, and they're very familiar with it. And we have a process in place when the reports are complete, when we can release those.
Thank you so much. There's no way I'm insinuating we need to put a fees on those
sure.
reports. I'm just trying to understand for my sake. So thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Heyman.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. All right. We will go on to our last agenda item, which is an ordinance adopting a new chapter of the Tukwila Municipal Code. Of the Tukwila Municipal Code around indemnification of city employees, officials, and volunteers. Go ahead, Rachel.
So good evening again. I'm here on behalf of the city attorney. You know, we have a relatively new city attorney, and as she was reviewing our Tukwila Municipal Code, noticed that unlike most jurisdictions around the state, we actually don't have an indemnification clause in our Tukwila Municipal Code. So Carrie describes this as a housekeeping item. Indemnification is very common throughout the state. You can see there in the memo, RCW allows for that. It protects volunteers, it protects elected officials, and it protects staff. So I am here before you to ask that we move this to consent. I was at PCD earlier today. They also agreed to move it to consent at the special meeting for next week. I think the memo, Carrie did a great job, I thought, of articulating the memo really well. So I don't think you need much more than from me, but I'm happy to answer questions that I can.
Thanks, Rachel. Councilmember Kruller, do you have any questions?
No, this, I'm surprised it took this long. I think we ought to get it in place post haste.
Councilmember Edan?
No questions. I support this moving forward.
I don't have any questions as well. I'm glad we're going to get this in the TMC, and I think we're all in agreement. It can go on consent.
Great. Thank you all. Appreciate it.
Thanks. All right, that concludes our agenda for today. Does anybody have miscellaneous for this? Oh, Councilmember Kruller, and then Councilmember Edan.
Thank you.
Just very briefly, I want to thank you for your service as chair, and Zach, for you being on this committee this year. Feel the same way about Deshaun Quinn. This is one of the more active, and I think the more impactful committees. When it comes to actually direct connecting the community, I think you guys have done a stellar job, and I couldn't have imagined a better result for 2021. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Council President.
Yeah, thank you, Council President. I also want to really say thank you and accolades and, you know, to the chair, Council Member Cynthia Delciunas Johnson. I think you've really chaired with compassion and empathy and respectful demeanor to across all people that have participated. So I just want to say thank you. It's been very productive, very busy, committee. So I just want to say thank you. I also want to say thank you to the two, chiefs that have been really consistent, our fire chief, Jay Webber, and our police chief, Eric Griever. And their staff and the mayor's office staff. So all of you guys, thank you, and thank you for your support throughout this year. I yield back.
Thank you. I will echo everything that we've heard, especially from the leadership, from the chiefs, the deputy chiefs, especially Laurel, too, pulling everything together for us, David, Rachel. It's all of you guys who prepare these memos for us to be able to make these decisions. And so I thank you for that work, because without you, we wouldn't be able to be here making decisions without your great memos and presentations. So I appreciate all the work that you do for our city. Thank you to my fellow council members. And it's been a great time chairing this committee. I really enjoyed it.
No, thank you.
All right. Well, you all get a little bit of a break before our next meeting.
All right. See you guys all.
See you there. Bye.
See you guys there. Bye-bye.